I better run before he gets me in a headlock because he's a big lad, used to run a nightclub and up.
Cheers, Kevin.
What a pleasure to be here on Celebration Sunday. I mean, I thought last Sunday was Celebration Sunday, Ken, after that penalties, but... No, it's a pleasure to be here today. When Kevin asked me, I was honoured to actually be asked to come through and share. And when I was preparing for today, I was thinking, how do I start off in Fraserburgh, me being for Peterhead? And I can remember years ago, my granddad was in a wheelchair, so I'd taken him out for a walk in his wheelchair, and we were beside the Waterside Inn, and I saw a sign, I said, "Granddad, what's that?" And he went, "Then I go there, son." I went, "Why nay, Ken?" He says, "Is that a forbidden land?" He went, "No, it's Fraserburgh." But before I get lynched, I'm actually married to a Brocher, so I'm allowed to make jokes about it. So, how did I come to be standing here today? Well, firstly, I'll tell you a bit about me, and then I'll tell you how I got to become here. So I was born in Peterhead, and my dad, at the time when I was born, my dad was an alcoholic, and my dad was quite an abusive alcoholic, so my mum decided the only way to keep us out together was to move us as far away as we could for a pub. So we moved out to a wee place called Tarvis, which is out near O'Meldrum, and we grew up on a farm, because my family was farming background on my dad's side. But I can remember at a really young age that life was really tough, and my dad was quite an abusive parent, and he used to make us go out and help him feed animals and stuff like that. But I've got one younger brother, and basically life was just really tough when we were growing up. When I was 12, we moved away from Tarvis. We moved up to Forest, to another farm, and I hated it. Absolutely hated it. I got a new school. I had no friends. The first day there, I had a teacher who took a massive pick on me for some reason, and basically it just made my life hell. So when I was about 13, 14, I decided I had enough of school. I wasn't gone. I just refused to go. The days I went to school was the days when it was raining, when I couldn't have been a tractor working in a firm. When I was 14, I found out there was a great group of guys. They were called the Young Farmers. It was a way to make new friends, and it was also a way to escape from family life and spend time with people who knew nothing about what happened behind closed doors. Now, loads of you will think that Young Farmers is all about drinking. Well, I'll tell you, Young Farmers are not all drinking. 85% of it is drinking. But they do teach you some things, and one thing they really taught me was how to party. Oh, I love to party. And it was about this time when I'm looking back that I started to get things happening in life that I thought was coincidence or luck. And I can remember the first one really was, I was about 15, and we were going to a Young Farmer's Night Out. There was about 10 of us, and they all came to my house to meet up, and we would go and go to our night out. And my pal was sitting in the car. He'd arranged to meet some lassie at this party, so he was desperate to get going. And I was like, well, my belly starts rumbling. I said, I need to go to the toilet. And he's like, I'm not waiting for you. I was like, well, I've got a toilet. I says, I'll go with them, and he can go with you. So they left. I went to the toilet for about 5 minutes, came out, got in the car. We got 3 miles along the road when we found a car. It was a fireball. And we stood and watched five of our friends burnt to death that night in our car. Now, I stood there and thought, wow, how lucky was I that I never got in that car. That was coincidence to me, and I was just luck. So after that, I went in a bit of a downer, going out with Young Farmers more often, drinking more often, and then, as usual, when you start going out drinking with a group of guys, you end up fighting. And every weekend, we ended up somewhere, there was a fight with somebody. We ended up fighting with somebody. And then that's when I realized that, look, I'm a big lad, I can handle myself, and so... But a few years moved on, and my dad took ill, and we moved jobs again, and we moved back down to Peterhead. And I was struggling to find work, and there's not much jobs for a farmer in Peterhead. And I just really couldn't see tractors doing the harbour. So I went on a night out, and I was sitting speaking to a guy in a pub, and I says, telling the guy, I can't find a job, man. It's just, how do you find a job in Peterhead? And he's like, my boss is on about looking for a boy to come in a fishing boat. He says, he's got a chancer for you. And I was like, magic, eh? And he was telling me how good the money was. And I was like, great, I'm gone. So I went home, says to my granddad. My granddad's been in the Navy and then a fisherman all his life. All my uncles on my mum's side are fishermen. I said, I've got a job. And he's like, oh, magic, cool, where are you going? So I'm going fishing. And he just looked me straight in the eye. He says, if you walk out a door to go fishing, you're never coming back. And I was like, fit? And I says, all my family are fishermen. And he's like, if you walk out that door, go fishing, you're never coming back. He says, and there's no merits to the story. Well, I respect my granddad, but I went to my bed at night and I thought about it, and I could see the pound signs, and I was like, I've got to go. So I got up 6 in the morning, I got up, grabbed my bag, come and eat at my granny's house, and my granny's got a great big steep staircase that takes you right to the door. I got halfway down that stairs when someone hit me in the chest, and I stopped on that stairs, and I couldn't move. And I sat there and I was crying. I was like, I want to go, Ken. It's like, someone stopped me for a gun. A few days later, it was the 1st of October, 1987, news broke in Peterhead that a vessel was lost at sea. That vessel was a Sapphire. I lost my friend plus 3 other guys that day. I was going on the Sapphire. This is coincidence. And so I was a bit of a mess after that, really, and I started to go out, mate. I started drinking, mate, and I thought, nah, I'm going to need to route my dad went. I'm going to become an alcoholic at this rate. So it was like, nah, I can't do this. The other thing was I didn't have a job. I couldn't afford it. So I ended up working indoors in pubs and clubs. And I knew I could handle myself, because if I'd been one that could handle myself, it was an easy way to make money. But something that I'm nae proud of now is the fact that I got a real buzz out of that job. See, when it all kicked off and I got to slap folk about and chuck them out and get rough folk up, and it was like, at the time, adrenaline kicks in and you get this real rush. And now looking back, I think, wow, what did I really do that? When I was 23, life changed again. And I moved off of Peterhead because there was just nothing. So I thought, where's the best place in Britain to go to? Let me think. Blackpool. Abdi goes to Blackpool. So I moved there, and I stayed there for a year. And, well, it was an experience. I couldn't find a job to start with, so I thought, right, what can I do? I can work at pubs. I can work at clubs. So I got a job as a nightclub bouncer down in Blackpool. And boy, it was a bit different. I'd worked on club doors and stuff before, but this was different. It really was. And I find it amusing because the club that I got a job in was called Heaven and Hell. And I actually worked in this club called Heaven and Hell. And the club was just massive. It was huge. It held 3,000 folk when it was full. And there was one Saturday night while I was working, there was a big, massive guy at the top started fighting. So me being the big guy, I romped in. I just grabbed the guy in a headlock and trailed him down the stairs. And all the way down, the guy fought me all the way down the stairs, so he got bounced off a few walls and stuff, but we got him out. And I can remember him standing there, and he shouted, mate, I'm going to shoot you, I'm coming back, I'm shooting you. And I was like, forever, again. See, we've been working the doors for years. You hear in drunken tongues through idle gestures all the time. It's like, you've heard them all before. 10 minutes later, I was standing at a club door like this against the wall speaking to somebody. And something caught my eye at the corner of my eye, and I just went like that and moved. And it was the biggest bang I've ever heard. It was massive. I've never heard a bang like it. And when I looked back, there was a hole the size of that circle in that wall, through the wall. And the guy had shot straight directly where I was standing at the wall. Blew a hole straight through the bar. And I'm still standing going, what a coincidence that was. How lucky was I that I moved. Again, how lucky I spoke to somebody. And I've loads of times in life when I can tell you stories like this. But things changed, and the past for a reason, so I'm not going to dwell on the past, because what's more important to me now is where my future's going. So how did I find God? Well, it's a hard fault. I was a manager at a Deja Vu nightclub for 12 years, and somehow, through friends, I met my wife, Janice. She introduced me to Apex Church before we were married. We were just friends at the time, and I felt really awkward going to church. I was like, here was me, again, manager of the largest nightclub in the northeast of Scotland, also the leaseholder of the West End Bar in Peterhead. Now, if anybody has never been to the West End Bar, it was rough. It was really rough. It made Marconi Road look like Las Vegas. That's how rough it was. And it just was like, but I found it a challenge. And I was going in, I was going to sort out this pub. So I was there for 2 years as well. And then when I started coming to church, it was like, there's something near right here. Churches and pubs just didn't go hand in hand. It's near right. I can remember one day in the street, I was helping a friend. He was running for election, and we were speaking to this lady who he was a friend of, and she looked at me and she says to him, she says, why are you speaking to him? He's like, what? She says, that boy's the son of Satan, man. He's dragging folk to drink. It was like, really? And it's a job. But this is what people thought. But all that changed. I went on holiday to Ibiza in May 2013. I'd never had a boys' holiday in my life. So I was at a stage in life, I'd separated from my previous partner. I was just going through this phase. I thought, I'm going to go wild. I'm going to Ibiza. Boy, it changed my life. I went with my best pal Mark, and on the second last night, I was sitting outside a place called Cafe Mambo. And Cafe Mambo, is when you look from Cafe Mambo across the islands, there's two islands, and right in between the islands is where the sun sets. The most amazing sunset and sunrise you'll ever see in your life. And I'm sitting there, I've had a few drinks, and I'm sitting there thinking, just sitting there, watching the sunset. And this guy appeared. And the guy, I can only describe him as a beggar. He looked like a beggar. He had long, straggly hair. He had his dirty clothes. And he came along, and he stood beside me, and he says, look, he says, can I speak to you for a minute? I was like, oh. I said, I've got no money. And he's like, no. He says, I'm a street preacher. He says, can I speak to you? I've got a message for you. And he sat down next to me, and I was like, oh, great, here we go again. I says, look, I'm on holiday. I'm not interested in church. I says, I go to church. I've been to church, but I'm not interested in church. He went, no, I've got a message to tell you. And he stood there, and he says, one day you'll be offered his coat, and even though you're not cold, you will wear it. And then he got up and left, and I'm sitting there going, oh, I've had too much vodka, man. Oh. And I looked down, and the guy was gone. There was nobody. You could look a mile that way, and probably about half a mile that way. There was nobody, and that way was sea. Who was the guy? I was freaked out. That night was the only night in Ibiza that I had a cheeseburger. Hiya! How are you doing? The only night in Ibiza, I can never say that I had a cup of tea and a cheeseburger. I went to my bed early because I was so freaked out with this guy. But I came home and thought no more about it. I didn't even tell my pal Mark about it because he probably thought, oh, you were drunk again. And I came home and I told Janice about it. So the following Sunday, we're sitting in church. And Neil Cameron, our pastor, he was speaking about the notices and stuff. And we had a picnic coming up. We have a picnic every summer. And he just turned around and he says, I'd like to thank Sandy Garvick for offering to wear a sweetie coat. Well, I just fell off a seat because I had told nobody about this coat. I'd never even heard what the sweetie coat was. But it's a coat that you wear at a picnic covered in sweeties and the kids chase you around the park and demented trying to get them. But here was me being told I'm wearing this coat. And it just blew me away. And that was the day that someone clicked that things weren't right. The next day, I went into the club, and I handed him a notice. I left the club, I handed him my keys, and I left. I resigned. I'd already given up a pub, so I was that. I'm here, no matter how many pubs and clubs. I'm going to change my life. Life's not going to be this way. And it turned out to be one of the best decisions I've ever made, because things were tough for a while, and we had no money, no job, but in my head, something kept saying, it's all going to be all right. My hand's going to be okay. I found work, but still, there was something missing in my life. And 22nd of March 2014, me and Janice got married, and I was delighted. Oh, it was going great, but still, there was something missing. When I had a wonderful wife, but someone was missing. Couldn't figure out if it was. Or maybe I did, but I was denying if it was. But see, getting married, I was thinking about it before I get. And when you get married, it was me and my two pals got married at the same time. And I'm going to tell you about them, because any guy here who's not married, who's thinking about getting married, or even if you are married, I've got something to warn you about, to be careful for what you choose, for you pick. And my pal Matt Allen, he married a queen for Ellen. And once married, he told her that he expected his clothes washed and dried, his supper on the table, ready for him coming home, and a bonny tidy house. It took a few days, but by the end of the first week, the house was spotless. Supper was made, his clothes was ironed. Boy, he was delighted. I've got a pal Steve, he married a queen for Mintla. Once they were married, he told her he expected his clothes washed and ironed, supper on the table, ready for him coming home, and a nice tidy house. Well, she was from Mintla, so she was a bit slower to catch on. But by the end of the first month, the house was spotless, supper made, clothes ironed, and a hamper of war. Well, me, I made it a brocher. I got home, I says, Janice, look, you need to get us sorted, man. I need my clothes washed and ironed, because they're getting it. I need my supper on the table for me coming in. A nice tidy house. Well, by the end of the first week, I could start to open my eyes again. And then by the end of 18 months, the doctor had said, you're okay, the bruising's gone and the bones have healed. So just be careful if you go in and demand for your wife, guys. But no, seriously, I'm just a bit of a joker. Me, I love a joke. But joking aside, we got married in March, and things were going great. And then in May, things took a bit of a change. I was rushed into hospital because I woke up one morning and I had an excruciating pain just right at the top of my groin, just right in here. and I had what could only be described as a lump the size of a banana, just all the way around the inside of my thigh. And we thought all the good things were crashing down around us. When I first got admitted to hospital, doctors didn't have a clue if it was wrong with me. Couldn't tell me. And they came out with some weird and wonderful names that I didn't understand, but this really worried us because Janice's first husband, he died of leukemia. So here was us thinking the worst, going, surely it can't happen to her again. Surely it can't have far apart. But thankfully, the doctors found out that it turned out that I'd an infection of some sort in my body, and the only gland to catch it was the gland in my thigh, and it caught everything in that bit. So I was put on a course of antibiotics and some stuff, and it did help. And when I was in hospital, one of the nurses came to me, and she's like, she says, do you mind if I speak to you? And I was like, oh, okay. She's like, I work in a diabetes clinic. She says, and we've studied you. She says, and I'm pretty sure you've got diabetes. And I was like, oh, that's all I need, Ken. So she explained all the symptoms, and I was ticking boxes left, right, and center, and I was like, great, Ken, here we go. So we came here for hospital, and I was told I'd have to get some tests and stuff. But the following week, we got up, we went to church as normal, and that was the day that my life transformed. It was Sunday the 7th of June, I can remember it, the 7th of the 7th, 14. So a normal Sunday morning, we got up, we had our breakfast, got ready, went to church. Nothing unnormal about it. We were sitting, and Pastor Neil started speaking about heroes and Jacob. And I didn't know why, but when he started speaking, I started to feel ill. I felt sick. And I thought it was the drugs and stuff, but I just felt so sick, so ill. And then I started to burn inside. I started sweating. I remember it because Janice had on a pair of white linen breeks, and I put my hand on her leg to steady myself. And when I took my hand off, her trousers had actually gone see-through. My hand was sweating so bad. And she asked me if I was okay, and I was like, nah. I feel really, really, but I was on fire, I was sweating, I was pouring off me. And Neil was closing up to preach, and as he was, he made an appeal that anybody wanted to make a connection with God to raise their hand, and boom, here was me like this. I could actually remember my shoulder hurt because I'd even came, why? And Neil says he hadn't even finished the appeal, my hand was up, I was just adamant that was me. Now, I'm a big guy, I'm tough. I didn't cry in public. You back again? I didn't cry in public, but here I was stood in church in front of all these folks standing, just bawling my eyes out, greeting. But when I put my hand up, I can honestly say that the burn that was inside me shot straight up out of my hand. I've never felt so alive, so on fire, so just pumped up in all my days that I did at that minute when I put my hand up. I was called to the front, and I was led through a sinner's prayer, and I was just buzzing. I was buzzing like a secondhand fridge. It was just like, and I was, the day couldn't have gotten any better for me. That night, we were sitting in the house. Now, I've got a daughter, Kirsten. She was 11 at the time. And she came in and says, Dad, I want you to buy me something for my birthday. Now, my daughter can't even decide what day of the week it is. Never mind what she wants for her birthday. So I was shocked. And then I says, well, what do you want? And she turned and says, can you buy me a Bible? Now, my daughter had been at Sunday school that morning. She hadn't a clue what happened with me in the morning. She asked me to buy her a Bible. Now, I want somebody to tell me, is this all coincidences? There's no coincidence. So 2 weeks after I was saved, I went and got my blood tests, and every test came back saying we're 110% certain that you do not have diabetes. Every symptoms I had disappeared. I had rashes on my arms, they disappeared. Everything was gone. And life couldn't get any better. It was awesome. But then it did get better. Monday the 18th of August, I was at work, and I got a message through Facebook. Now, I hate Facebook. I really hate it. But I'm so nosy that I can't even get rid of it. I've got to be on it. I'm on it the minute I wake up, Fitzley saying. It's just nosiness. And see for Abdi's saying, see for Abdi's Dean, Ken. Wind up some Celtic fans, Ken. We've got to hate Facebook. But there was a message from my daughter, Kirsten, and it's simply read, Dad, I want to give my life to God. Well, I was blown away. I phoned Pastor Neil straight away. Neil, you're not going to believe this. I'm greeting again. Told him about it. So the following Sunday, I got the pleasure of standing next to my daughter and witnessing her devoting her heart to the Lord. And I was such a proud parent that day. But things just keep getting better and better. The 3rd of March last year, it was a massive day for me. And my dad came to church. Now, this was my abusive, alcoholic dad who had no interest in it. 30 years my dad hadn't stood foot in a church apart from a wedding or a funeral. And even then he didn't want to go to them. And my dad came to church. He came to listen to my daughter singing in a choir. And I was shocked. But I was even more shocked in the afternoon when I got a phone call from my dad saying, I hear you're giving your testimony at Apex tonight. What time do I be there? And it was like, wow. So my dad was coming to Apex that night, and I was thinking, God, you've just worked a miracle, man. You really have worked a miracle. But thinking that day couldn't get any better, something happened in that day that blew me away, and I was well. The week before, I'd been in Ireland, because I worked for a hydraulic company at the time, and we went to Ireland to a small fishing port called Cloggerhead. Cloggerhead's a really small fishing port in the middle of nowhere, halfway between Dublin and Belfast. And it's boring. It's the most boring place you've ever been. Actually, it's like Rosarty, it's like that. It's just boring. There's nothing happening, skin. The only folk that come in and out of Cloggerhead is a tide. Again, there's just nothing happens. And we were there working, and when we got there, the guy says to the guy, where we're staying, and he was like, oh, he says, my friend, he says, has got a mom, who's got a mom, who's got an aunt, she's got a spare bedroom. So we were biding 3 miles away from where we worked. There was no internet, there was no TV in my room, and it was me and this old guy sharing a room, because the two of us were working. I was like, nah, it's not happening. And so he says, I fancy going for a pint. I was like, yes, civilization, I'll drive. So we did. It was 3 miles to the nearest pub. We went to the pub, and I sat with my cola. There was an England football game on, I can remember that, and I just can't stand England football games, they're boring. But we're sitting watching this football, and there was this old guy sitting at the bar, and he kept staring at me. And I was like, have I got two heads or something, good? But he just sat and stared at me the whole night. So the second night, the guy was with Roger, he's like, we're going back to that pub. He says, that was a good pint. I was like, aye, I'll drive. So he goes back, and I'm sitting there with my cola, just minding my own business. And this old guy walked up to me, and he says, why are you in a pub in Ireland drinking cola? And I was like, well, I'm driving. Oh, it's fine, he says. He says, I thought you were one of those holy, holy kind of guys who wouldn't hear a drink. I was like, oh, well, come in here, seat. I says, I'll buy you a pint. So I bought the boy a pint, and he sat with me, and we sat and spoke. The guy was called Angus. He was a fisherman. He was 75. He'd hit his fishing boat up until he was 60, and things started to get downturn. Angus found alcohol. He gave his boat. He lost his boat, his wife, and his two sons, all through alcohol. They didn't want nothing to do with him. So I spent about an hour sitting speaking to him and telling him how much my life had transformed in the past year. And as I was leaving, I gave him my phone number in case he ever wanted to speak, thinking I would never hear from the guy again. Well, that afternoon, we were just getting ready to leave the house to go and give my testimony at Apex. I got a text message for a strange number. And when I opened it, the text message read, hi there, you met my dad, Angus, in Cloggerhead this week. He wants you to know that for the first time in 15 years, he turned up at my house sober, wanting to go to church, and we both went and we both got saved. How awesome's that? Now, see the fact that you can feel that I've played this tiny little part in that guy's salvation. That was awesome for me. And I just blew me away. And that night I went to church and I gave my testimony. And I can't even remember giving my testimony because I was in such a high. And a couple of weeks before I'd given my testimony, I'd written it because I knew I was going to be in Ireland. And it tied in great because I wrote a quote from Proverbs chapter 16, verse 9. It says, in his heart, a man plans his course, but the Lord will determine his steps. And I've learned in life that no matter what path you take, you'll always end up on the right road if you allow God into your life. And the following week, my dad appeared again at church on a Sunday morning. And that was the day my dad responded. And my dad's in church most weeks now. My dad's even started volunteering at Apex Nations, which is for the Filipino fishermen and the foreign fishermen coming here. I can't believe that my dad's actually in church, never mind helping out. So God's awesome. God is awesome. On the 3rd of May, I made a huge choice to get baptized. Now, anybody who knew me will know that I am absolutely petrified of water. Even washing my face petrified me. When I was 3, I slipped in a bath and knocked myself out and almost drowned. So the thought of getting into a baptismal tank petrified me. My daughter turned around and says, all right, Dad, she says, I'll do it with you. So I had no option but to do it. Me and my daughter, Kirsten, got baptized in the same night, and it was just awesome. And I've never looked back, and now I have no phobia of water. Water doesn't bother me. It really doesn't bother me at all. Then Just shortly after that, my stepchildren, Joshua and Rebecca, they decided one evening during their bedtime prayers that they wanted to give their heart to the Lord as well. So there was blessing in our household, apart from one. There was my wee boy, Jake. He was 10. Now, Jake is the most cautious boy you've ever met. Jake, when I believe it's green, unless he's looked at it and he sees it's green himself, he's 110% needs to be sure on him. And every time I used to say to him about getting saved or coming to church or whatever, he was like, I don't want to talk about it. So, okay. Well, sadly, my granddad died earlier on, middle of last year. And we were going through a really tough time, accepting the fact that my granddad died, because he was a huge part of your family. And then I was asked to preach on Father's Day at Apex. Well, somebody told me, once you're asked to preach in the morning at Apex, you've made it. So I was like, oh, yes, I've got it, yes, like, Ken. Well, Father's Day came, and I spoke about heroes, because that was what we'd been speaking about the weeks leading up to it, we were speaking about heroes. And I explained how my grandfather had been my hero, and how God is my new hero, because we never ever knew that my grandfather was a Christian until 2 days before he died. And I was sitting with him late one night with my auntie, and my granddad turned around and told us how he'd been saved as a young boy, and how he used to sing in the choir in church, and how he still had his Bible right next to his bed. And it was just like, wow. So God became my new hero. God sacrificed everything for us. He sacrificed that for me, for you. Again, he gave his only son just for us. Then, so Father's Day, I spoke about this, and I had a few stories. I love stories. And I made my appeal. And as I was starting to make an appeal, I looked at Jake, and Jake put his hand up. So it was my boy who responded to me on Father's Day, and that was the best Father's Day present I could ever have had. And when I says to him later on, I says, why did you do that? He's like, it just felt right. It's all I needed. So I can now safely say God's a massive part of my family, and I've never been happier. Fair enough, I've got trials and tribulations and daily things, but I've never ever felt happier, more content. And really, that's my testimony up until where I am now. Where I'm going is the fact that I'm starting fundraising now, because next summer I'm going to the Philippines with some of the Apex guys, and we're going to go and spend a fortnight in the Philippines. And my biggest phobia before was water. Well, I've set myself a challenge to conquer my next biggest phobia. And when I go to the Philippines, I'm going to spend the night living in one of their houses, because I've got a massive phobia of rats, and somebody told me there's rats away. So I'm going to go and spend the night with them. They're not going to get any sleep, because I'll be screaming all night, but I'm going to go and do it. So that's where I'm planning ahead. But a few months ago, a friend of mine, he's sitting right here, Martin Christofferson, we were sending stuff back and forth on Facebook, and he sent me a wee challenge. And it was to put a simple line about God on my Facebook every day and observe a reaction of friends and family. Simple lines were, God is real, God is good, God is faithful, God is my strength, God is my shield, God is love, and finally, God is alive. Every day there was comments. Some of them I cannot repeat. But I had some horrible comments for people. There was one guy who I had been all the way through school with. He sent me the biggest rant I've ever had in my life, saying how much I was brainwashed, how much he hated me, how much I didn't want to be with me, he didn't want to be my pal, and he deleted me off Facebook. And it's a shame, because I still feel sorry for that guy yet. But the statement that got the biggest response was that God is real. But then something really puzzled me, because it was the amount of non-believers attacking me for believing that God is real. But if God's not real, why is he bothering them so much? Why does he bother non-believers if he's not real? Because he's not bothering me. I didn't stand and shout it in their faces every day about it, but I've got folk who, pretty on a weekly basis, will tell me that he's not real. But if he's not real, why is he bothering you? And that really puzzled me. But it also made me realize the challenges that we face daily as a Christian, and the way that people can feel they can judge us. And that just makes me even more proud to stand here and be a Christian. And I tell the world how great God is. But while preparing for this morning, I got a feeling that I should share a story from the Bible, but with a different twist on it. And it's a really well-known story. It's the story of David and Goliath. Now, David was an average Joe kind of guy, a bit like me. A bit like most of us here, actually. We're all average Joe kind of guys when you look at us from the outside. But he had to stand up and fight for his people. And that's what gets me, is the fact that this is a story that should never, ever have happened. Why did one guy have to stand up and fight a giant? Why just one guy, when the whole village could have stood up and been an even greater force? Goliath used to stand and mock the people every day for 40 days. Yet everybody sat and did nothing. Right, I'm going to ask for a volunteer here, actually. I'm going to hear somebody who's had a really bad week and had a major disappointment. And Kevin, you're a Celtic fan, so you'll help you come. Right. I promised Kevin I wasn't going to speak about football, but I'm not going to get too much in it. But what I want you to imagine is, right, I'm Goliath. This is David. Right? If I stand here for 40 days and push him about, he's still not going to beat me. He's not going to fight me because he want to win because I am Goliath. Right? But see if every one of yous stood up and stood there behind him. There's no way I'm fighting him. There's no way on earth that I would stand and fight a guy with all you guys stood behind. No matter what size you are, who you are, how old you are, how young you are. I'm not stupid. Right? That's all I think. And I'm not going to see that. Right? But the thing is, Goliath doesn't have to be a giant. Goliath can be drugs. Goliath can be legal high. Goliath can be alcohol. Goliath can be a bully. Goliath can be depression. Goliath can be ill health. Goliath can be a financial worry. Goliath can even be society. Society treats us like dirt at times because of what we believe in. Goliath can be many different things. But why do we not stand up and fight him? Why do we not stand up and fight with Goliath? Nehemiah chapter 8:10 states, "The joy of the Lord is our strength." David refused to wear his body armor as he knew that he had God's armor. And as I says, God's my strength and my shield. But my question is, are you wearing God's armor? Do you need to give your armor a good polish? Remember, if your armor's rusty, it's maybe because your Bible's a bit dusty. And as Christians, if we all stood up together as David's, we would be a much greater force. And there's no giants that could stand in our way. There's none at all. And as you heard from my testimony, I'm just a normal guy, or I think I'm normal. But with God on my side, I now feel like I am David. I found a way daily that I can beat my giants. And every day I get giants, but I beat them. And I'll happily stand here and say that every day I wear God's armor. But as I wrap up, I've got a question to ask. And is, are you a David? And are you wearing your armor? Are you willing to stand up and fight against the giants that you face in life, no matter who you are? I'm going to ask you that to bow your heads and close your eyes. And I want you to picture what your giant is. Just imagine what your giant is in your head. And now I want you to decide, are you a David? Are you willing to stand up and fight them? Or are you just going to sit here and let demons rule your life? God's made a huge difference in my life. And I want to allow everyone here a chance to connect with God. And if you've never declared your need for God in your life, but you feel that you need his love, I'd ask it as you raise your hand so I can see it. I'm not going to mock or fool anybody. I'm not going to bring anybody forward and embarrass them. But I want to ask what's stopping you. If God's not a massive part of your life, what's stopping God being in your life? God's made a huge difference to me. Thank you. You put your hand down, it's okay. Right, but also, maybe you once did know God. Maybe God was a part of your life. Maybe you're not walking so closely with God. And I'm going to offer you the opportunity to ask God to come back and stand next to you and fight with you. Because God will fight with you. And if that's you, I'd like you to raise your hand. Thank you, guys. You can put your hands down. I'm going to ask you guys who've raised your hands to come and see me at the end, because I'm going to stay for a while and speak to you and share with you. But you can ask it up now. I'd like to thank you for allowing me the pleasure to come and speak today. It's been awesome. There's been three people responded today, which I think is just amazing, and they are deserve a round of applause. You guys have made the best decision you'll ever make. And I'm going to hang about for a while, and I am a Peterhead, and it's safe to come and say hi. I'm not going to bite you, and as long as you know about me, because I don't like being bit. And I'm going to thank you very much, and I'm going to hand you back to Kevin.